Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Monte, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Ryan Devereux, Dina Gazdur, Manal Khan, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Nick Gilla, Hugh Grant, Jessel Noor, Jessica Lee. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO at 8, it's Native Voices from the Edge with guest host Jacqueline Keeler in a presentation of Not Your Disappearing Indian. She visits NFL protests with the Not Your Mascot campaign. KBOO keeps you informed and you can get involved. Go to KBOO.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a project manager to help organize our 50th anniversary celebrations in 2018. We are looking for someone who can help track and organize all that we have going on in our 50th anniversary year, including publications, exhibits, events, web content, archival ephemera, cafe press, and more. We are looking for prior experience with project management, examples of ability to lead and manage volunteers, build partnerships, and organizational skills. The deadline to apply is November 23rd at 5 p.m. More information about the position and how to apply can be found at kboo.fm/hiring.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2017 Iconic Music Party, Thursday, November 30th at 8 p.m. at the 6 West Lounge in Vancouver, Washington. Performing at this year's Iconic Music Party will be the True Original Beings, C4 The Prodigy, MC Groan, Mike Crenshaw, Caleb Wildcard, and Ivan Jamel. There will also be EDM and hip-hop DJs at the 21 and Over event. Again, that's the 2017 Iconic Music Party on Thursday, November 30th, 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. at 6 West Lounge, 606 Broadway Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, it's an indigenous vision for the new millennium. Environmentalist, economist, and writer Winona LaDuke's landmark address from 1998. At 10, First Voices Radio, Oglala Lakota member Corrine Fairbanks talks about her work as director of the American Indian Movement in Southern California. And at 11, TUC Radio looks back at the life of legendary activist Dennis Banks, who co-founded the American Indian Movement. But next at 8, it's Native Voices from the Edge with guest host Jacqueline Keeler and a presentation of Not Your Disappearing Indian. She visits an NFL protest with the Not Your Mascot campaign. KBOO keeps you informed and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
If blackface is not okay, which we all know it's not okay, it's racist. You know, if wetback is not okay, and we all know it's not okay, it's racist, then I would hope that they would understand that redskins is not okay, it is racist.
Hi, this is Jacqueline Keeler. I'm your host for this, the first episode of Not Your Disappearing Indian, a new podcast about all the ways Native people are not going away and how America's got us all wrong.
I hope that they enjoy their game, but I hope that they would stand in solidarity with us and turn their...
This episode, we'll be talking to some of the Native women who are on the front lines of organizing Not Your Mascot protests from coast to coast. This NFL season marks the return of the LA Rams after 23 years to the City of Angels, and also the return of the Washington NFL team from our nation's capital to play them. The audio you hear at the beginning of this podcast, courtesy of California for Progress, is from last week's protest, organized by Native Los Angelinos to tell the Washington team to change the name. Let's hear some more from that rally.
Sir, turn your jersey inside out. Don't support a racist name.
It's a be a model for children.
Sir, don't support a racist name.
Turn your jersey inside out.
Hey, turn your jersey inside out, buddy.
Our first guest is Marissa Gonzalez, a Cherokee who is living in Los Angeles, who helped organize the first LA Not Your Mascot protest in 23 years. We are also joined by two Native women who are trying to end the use of the term Redskin at their local high schools. We have Anne Mongilla-Remy Elenape, who has been battling the use of the R word by her alma mater in Hishemini, Pennsylvania, and Julie Dye, Potawatomi, who was also trying to end the use of the word by a local high school in Pawpaw, Michigan.
We are not your mascot. We are human beings. So, Marissa, tell me what it was like to have the Washington NFL team come to your hometown. For the first time in 23 years, they came to play the LA Rams.
Yeah, so they came to play the LA Rams at the Los Angeles Coliseum after not having a team in, you know, the heart of Los Angeles. We do have the LA Chargers, but that's in Carson. It was interesting because usually when we do activism work, it's around a community that's also very supportive of what we do. This was something different, I think, for a lot of people to do because we were basically telling people what they were doing affected us in a negative sense. So when you tell people that, their response is going to be either, you know, questionable or questioning you or pushback. And we ended up having a lot of pushback too. When we were telling people or trying to explain to people why it was offensive, why that was a slur, why it was disparaging towards natives, you know, their first comeback was, well, my wife is native. She's one third. They make up this ridiculous fraction, they immediately.
I should note that one third is not possible to be one third of anything. You're either one half, yeah, one quarter, one eighth. You have to have like three grandparents or something to be one third. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So that was a personal experience of mine. Someone did actually say that to me. The constant, like, you challenge their knowledge, you challenge what they know, and all of a sudden it's almost as if the world is blown wide open. Either they're okay with it or they fight you on it. And then they walk away and they say really mean things to you. We did have a lot of people also be very supportive of us. We had a lot of LA Rams fans be super supportive. We even had some of the fans of the opposing team actually switch their jerseys inside out or take off their jackets and flip them in so that the logos didn't see.
Yeah, you're asking Washington NFL team fans to basically turn their jerseys inside out, which I have actually never heard at a Not Your Mascot rally before, which I thought was actually really genius. I mean, it was a way for them to do something to respond and do something really positive right there and then.
Yeah, and we understand that NFL is a huge thing. It's a huge American sport, and that's why we weren't trying to push that NFL is terrible. We just wanted to push that, like, hey, what you're wearing affects us. Can you be kind enough to switch it inside out? Can you support the game but not your team name? And people were responsive to that. We had a deaf couple who were an interracial couple, and they actually had no idea that it was a racial term. And so luckily we had someone on site that knew sign language, and she was explaining to them what it was to us and who we were. And she started getting emotional and started crying because she had no idea. And they took off their shirts, flipped them inside out, and then you know, clapped for us, and we, you know, sign languaged applause to them, because we clapped to everybody who just showed any type of support. Because, I mean, even though they're still going to root for their team, they, for that 1 second, they understood that it did, you know, it is affecting the Native community. A lot of the pushback was from majority of the white people, who, you know, were saying, well, it doesn't offend me. It doesn't offend me. It's like, well, of course it doesn't offend you. So it was a good experience. And I think, now that more people know what it's like, to go against fans like this, fans who, you know, drink before the game, people get rowdy before the game and not have anything happen, have no real confrontations happen. It overall is extremely successful. I couldn't be any more happier.
How do you explain to, like, to maybe a little slightly drunken fans who are going to their game, how do you explain to them quickly as they're walking by what this mascot means to you? And I will say the name right now, because the term is Redskins, which refers to, not just this concept that our skin was red, which obviously it is not, but the actual scalps, the blood from the scalps that were taken as proof of kill of Native people the U.S. government used to pay for.
Sometimes you didn't even have enough time to explain that. Usually what I did was I had it pulled up on my phone, I'm sure we've all seen, like, the flyer, right, of the bounty that was set. I had that saved in my phone. I had the Marysville Daily Herald article saved in my phone, that highlighted piece. People respond more to visuals. I'm a visual person. If there's actual proof, a physical proof, people stop to listen. If you show someone that, you know, the KKK marched in the support for the Redskins being segregated, people stop and they're like, wait, what? Because that's history. That's something that they don't really talk about, that no one really talks about. So having images, having any type of proof to just stop and be like, hey, just look at this, you know, not trying to aggressively approach you or anything, but I do want to, you know, take some information home. But it's more visual than anything, because the minute you try and, you know, talk to them, they already know you're against what they're wearing. They kind of already have that wall building up against you.
So people were willing to stop and look at your phone and look at what you, and listen to what you had to present on your phone.
Sometimes they, you know, push my hand away or like, oh no, thank you. And I'm just like, all right, cool. Like, gonna move on to the next person. Majority of the time, who was really engaging when they saw the KKK photo that was taken by Neil Leifer, it was mostly the Black community that stopped and were like, what? They're like, what is that?
They
thought it was fake.
They thought the neo-Nazi KKK photo, I should explain that the Washington NFL team was the last team to integrate in the 1960s, and they were forced to do it to get their new stadium. And before that happened, it was the team of Dixie. Their chant used to have a thing about old Dixie in it. They were the Southern NFL team of the South. And when they were being forced to integrate, there was a march by the KKK and neo-Nazis with the whole swastika in support of keeping the Washington NFL team segregated and keeping it white.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the photos you were showing them.
So that photo is so in your face that some people even, they have to stop and look at it, because majority of the time they're like, no, that's fake. I go, no, it's not. Like, it's taken by an NFL photographer in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Like, so images catch people's attention. Some of, you know, some of the most memorable times in history is captured by photographs. I do film photography, so that's the way I see the world, is through photographs. So using what I know in a way to educate people, that slowed people down to actually want to listen to what I had to say and what people had to say. So it was really important to have those on hand.
So I'd also like to ask Anne and Julie, what things do you say to fans? I know that you both have been working mostly with high school fans, but how do you, what are the most effective tools that you found to educate and to reach out?
Well, are you talking about during protests or just educational?
I would say either would be fine, whichever you find that you think is something pretty notable and worth sharing.
So we just hit them up with some of the facts. A lot of times we have something that, you know, a couple flyers that we just print out just for us to show, like the bounties for the scalps and we just tell them how it was different prices and there was even a price for kids. This is just the historical facts seem to hit home.
So this is for the term Redskins, or is this for, I know that the high school was it the Neshaminy?
Neshaminy. For the R word.
Neshaminy Redskins was the name. It was actually the mascot for the high school. And, and I should note for the audience that the high school newspaper editors, they actually refused to print the word, and they were really punished by the administration. Can you explain a little bit about what happened with that?
Well, the Playwickians decided not to print the R word, and they were actually forced to print the R word. They said if someone sends in an article and it has the R word, they had to print it. And so basically what they did is they refused to print the letter. You know, they weren't going to block it out. If they weren't going to be allowed to block it out, they just said they weren't going to use it. So they really stuck up for the natives. And, you know, at Neshaminy, the protest about the R word comes up every so many years. You know, like in the 70s and the 90s, it just keeps coming up. And this time the Playwickians, because of, I guess, you know, being the time of, it is in history, they just really stuck to it. So, and they had a teacher that supported them on it too. So, yeah. But the principal actually went around grabbing the newsletters that the kids printed out and stealing them, you know. I mean, it was actually the case where the students did the right thing and the adults didn't do the right thing.
So the students understood that this was racist, and they refused. These are white students; they're not Indian. They published a publication called the Playwickian, and they actually refused to actually use the R word, and they were they actually barred from school for a while or taken off the paper? I seem to recall.
I know the teacher was suspended.
The teacher was suspended, yeah,
without pay. And I think the kids were too, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, it was a real First Amendment issue at the high school level, and I think it really it begs the question, like what is the NFL teaching by sort of modeling this at the national level in the capital of the United States? What is it teaching our kids?
Yeah, and they actually won awards, and it became a worldwide story because a lot of the other schools picked up on it. And
the students won awards, First Amendment awards, right, for journalism.
Yeah, for literature and, a lot of schools have newsletters. So it really went outside the Neshaminy community. I mean, they weren't used to having anybody else frown on them. You know, it's kind of like a small sheltered community, and they thought they could do whatever they wanted. But when it hit the national news, they were pretty shocked. So, and you know, some of the pictures went went and, you know, we had the parents saying, oh, take that picture down. They didn't like getting the backlash. I mean, it was fine for them to do it, but when push came to shove, they didn't like all the attention.
Which picture was shown?
Just pictures of different kids with their R-word gear.
Oh, so they didn't want the public to see the kind of things that the high school students were wearing in support of the mask.
Yeah, yeah, they just thought, you know, it was at our football game. It shouldn't have been on Facebook. It shouldn't have been on social media. They were the ones that were posting it, and they, you know, they learned a lesson that whatever they put online can go anywhere.
So they want to prepare. They want to enjoy their mask up, but they don't want to be judged or held accountable for their behavior. And this is what the adults were saying versus the students who had understood that this was a racist mascot. Yeah, is it still the mascot there?
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's the high school I went to. My family was the only Native family in the area. My grandfather actually did a blessing at the school for the statue. So, you know, my grandfather was always in the newspaper for Earth Day, and he was well known. So, they can't say that they didn't know anybody in the Native community to talk to. They just really just wanted to do what they wanted to do. So, because my grandfather used to go into the school and teach the first graders. He started with the younger kids. And, you know, he tried to educate them about the different stereotypes and, you know, get some of the correct history out there.
It's shocking that they've hung on to it even after facing so much, scorn. I mean, you would think it would sink in after a while.
Yeah, and we found that the kids were open to change, and it was the adults, you know, like my generation that went to the school. My mother went to the school. I even had a few aunts that were like, oh, I'm a Redskin, and, you know, they just didn't get it. So kind of divided my family a little bit, too.
So, Julie, I'm going to ask you the question, too. When you're confronting this ignorance, what are the best sort of tools, teaching tools that you have?
Well, I guess it depends on what school you're working with and the history of trying to work with that school. When we went to Belding was Belding, Michigan is almost like a suburb of Grand Rapids, an urban area that's very diverse. And I think a lot of the administrators and teachers actually relocated from Grand Rapids to Belding. So they were more receptive right off the bat. And even some of the school board members were more receptive to even listening to us. And so Belding actually, we got to the point where they invited us to come in, and they created a task force in the high school where we two of us went in and sat down with 12 high school students, and they were from a diverse, you know, several different classrooms, several different grade levels, and male and female, you know, diverse group, as diverse as they could be. And we explained to them and did a little presentation and had question and answer period. And they took a poll before we went in there. It was like 50% wanted to change, 50% wanted to stay the same. And after our presentation, they took another poll, and all 12 of them wanted to change. And we flipped them all.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, so your technique is actually to go and actually have a conversation and a presentation with the students themselves, and you were able to really to get a lot of them to understand.
Yeah, but that task force actually went back to the school and created a bigger committee, and they talked amongst themselves and shared the information we gave them, and the school board, and they talked to made a report to the school board, and the school board voted to change. So that was the difference, is that they let us talk to the kids. Pawpaw, my tribe, the Pokagon Band Potawatomi, have been trying to work with the Pawpaw High School for the last 15 years, and they've been ignored and put on the back burner and every excuse. They even fired terminated one of the superintendents there because he was receptive to change. So, I mean, they've dug their heels in at this point. They won't let us speak to the students. And the presentations that we did give, I mean, they came in the red shirts, and they came inebriated, and they came like a mob mentality. So it wouldn't matter what education we did give, and we gave plenty. We had speakers come in from the tribes, local tribes. We had handouts. We had question and answer. We had everything to offer them, but they were just hateful. And we had to have three different police departments there to escort people in and out of those meetings because of the threats. So the education piece.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
The adults. Yeah, the adults. But they did start to bring the kids in also. And the kids were getting abusive also.
Wow, because they saw the adults modeling that behavior.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And the adults were the ones who were inebriated when you gave presentations?
Right. They did. They told us that we should be tarred and feathered and run out of town, and they threatened our education director, tribal education director, after his presentation, and said they were going to get hunting dogs after the meeting and hunt him down, and it was crazy. It was crazy. So the education piece as far as Pawpaw is pretty much shut down. I mean, we still try to offer something, but I mean, it's just, and the bullies, the ringleader has this posse or whatever, this group of people that she has to help her, and she bullies the other residents in town that do try to speak out. So
This is in Michigan, right? And this is your tribe is.
It's a Pokagon Band of Potawatomi, and Pawpaw is in our service territory, and southwestern Michigan, actually. And I was born in Pawpaw.
So, what is your tribe's relationship historically has been like with the local community? Has it been hostile, or what is it like to live there as a Native family?
Well, it was. Pawpaw in southwestern Michigan is rural farming communities. It's mostly fruit farms and vegetable farms. And Pawpaw is known for its wine and grapes. They have three wineries there. But it's very rural, very isolated, not near any metropolitan areas. Kalamazoo would be the closest. And my tribe has a really strange history. That is our homeland, and the only reason we got to stay in the homeland after the everybody was relocated is because of a loophole in the law. My great-great-great-great-four-greats grandfather actually owned title to a piece of land when it was illegal for a native to own land. And it was given to him by the Catholic Church for a cemetery to bury our people at. So when they found out that he had this title to land, they legally could not remove us. And he was the chief. So we were allowed to remain. But they said, okay, you can remain there, but we're not going to recognize that you exist. So we didn't get federal recognition until 1994. Our people were just spread out in this community, just had to survive. A lot of them were dragged off. The kids were dragged off to boarding schools and lived in shacks, farming shacks, and worked as farm laborers, basically. So, yeah, just survival, or tried to survive, and a lot of them assimilated.
Carlisle Indian School is by me.
Oh, Carlisle Indian School is right by near Neshaminy in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a couple hours away, but it's it's a little day trip for me. But that's where they send everybody from, you know, the West came out this way.
Mm-hmm. We actually had two Indian boarding schools in Michigan. We have one in Mount Pleasant, and we had one in Harbor Springs up in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula.
Julie, how large is your tribe?
We have just over 5,000 members.
And how big is the
Pawpaw? Oh, Pawpaw is not very large at all. I I don't really know if I've population. It's almost entirely Caucasian. I do know that 94% or 96% white, and our tribal offices and traditional settlements are in Dowagiac, Michigan, and Hartford, Michigan, and South Bend, Indiana. As our service territory is 4 counties in Michigan and 6 in Indiana, and we're the only tribe that has service territory in Indiana.
How many Native students go to school in Papa?
I have the statistics here somewhere. I think there's something like 50 or 55. I think that's the total Native population in Papa. I don't think that's the student population, so it would be a lot less than 55.
Yeah, so these students are facing this somewhat alone, facing all this ignorance.
Right, and I have cousins, in fact, that are estranged from me now because of this issue, that trying to defend their neighbors and what they grew up in and everything, they've just we are estranged now because of it.
That's the same thing that happened to me.
Yeah, the whole thing of Native people supporting mascots. I don't know if you've seen Dr. Stephanie Freiberg's research. She's a Tulalip tribal member, and she did a lot of research on how mascots impact Native youth. In her studies, she found that Native students who claimed that they were okay with mascots, Native mascots, after being exposed to them, actually experienced a greater decline in self-esteem than other Native students. So it sort of suggests that the whole act of trying to normalize it and make it seem okay, actually, they pay a bigger price. You know, they expend a lot of energy doing it, energy that they could be using in other aspects of their life, like self-esteem and the belief they can complete goals that they have. And once again, it shows how, you know, just for the sake of entertainment, Native youth, who are the most the most vulnerable population of youth in this country by any measure, highest suicide rates, you know, highest rates of poverty, you know, Native women have the highest rates of murder and death, and just by any measure, they are forced to endure this as well, just for entertainment, because this really has no educational value.
The question was, as parents, what do we tell our children about this racist mascot? So when I had a conversation with my little dude on several occasions, but on the way over here, his first question was to me, well, then why don't they just change the name and understand how it harms us as a people? And I can't answer that for him.
Getting back to the youth, I wanted to ask Marissa, there were young people at the L.A., Not Your Mascot rally. What was it like for them? I mean, what did you see? How did that impact them to see adults behaving this way?
They kept repeating that they couldn't believe how many adults had no education. The sentence or the small phrase is, they have no education. And it's funny for kids to say that, because, you know, adults, these are people that you're constantly told by society or by whoever to, you know, adults know best. You know, never disrespect an adult, but you're having adults scream back at these kids, and these kids just, they were relentless. They didn't stop. Even when they got a reaction back, they kept making it a point that it affects them directly growing up. It affects them, you know, as kids seeing this, as being Native children seeing this. So it was actually a really good experience, I think, for them. But at the end of the day, they were really shocked that no one was willing to really listen to them at all.
Wow.
We had, I think, two youth speak about how they feel about the name. And, you know, it putting kids on the spot like that, sometimes, you know, You have people stopping and looking. You have kids stopping and looking because they are looking at this other kid who's basically telling them that what they're wearing offends them, and they're just like, what? I never thought of it that way.
Well, you did get an entire family to turn their shirts and jackets inside out, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We had an older brother, his younger brother, and his dad. The dad turned his jacket inside out, which is the video that you guys saw. And then the older brother turned his jersey inside out, and his little brother eventually, which wasn't being recorded, he already walked past the phone. He flipped it inside out. And these were people that, you know, we asked them, do you identify as Native? Do you identify as being Indigenous? And they're like, yes. And we're like, well, why are you wearing that? You see us on this side. Isn't this kind of a rude awakening for you to look at us and look at what you're wearing? And, you know, what he says, well, what else is there for us? And that's where I kind of realized that kids that grow up in urban communities, Native kids that grow up in urban communities, that aren't supplied with the proper means or so separated from their culture, they don't know how to reach out. So we actually started talking to him as he was taking off his jersey and explaining to him that, like, there's so much more. Like, this isn't a great representation of us. This is not even a representation of who we are. They're like, this is wrong. And to think that this is all you have, that hurts us to know that, because that means as a community, we aren't doing our job to reach out.
Well, it's a difficult job because, you know, we haven't had the resources as a community to, I think we've been very isolated. We are a minority amongst minorities in many of the communities we live in, even on our own reservations, and certainly in urban areas. And, I think that really with the rise of social media have we had the ability to talk to each other as a community. And for a lot of, and the way white society portrays us, it's solely as a mascot. There are no other depictions of Native people. There are no TV shows featuring modern Native families in all our different varieties. I think it's not our fault. I think it's colonialism, it's mass destiny and this white supremacy where, you know, even in Hollywood there in LA, most of the acting roles go to white people. I mean, when was the last time you saw a TV series that featured a modern Native person as the main character? I mean, it's almost never, right?
It's become so easy for that. You know, for people to claim Native descendants or Native ancestry. I mean, just an example of, you know, the movie Wind River, where the woman that was casted as Native, she's not Native. She said she was part of Eastern Band Cherokee, and she's not.
But even in that depiction, though, done by a white man, you know, white Native women are just the victims, and they have to wait for the FBI to come to their rescue finally. Which is not really what our reality is like. You know, Native women are leading the charge in the fight against missing and murdered Indigenous women. Oh, I wanted you, Marissa, to also talk about what it was like, what you saw after the game.
Oh, God.
Did you mention that there were more Washington fans at this LA game than there were Rams fans?
Yeah, I was really shocked at that. From majority of what I saw a lot more Redskin fans than I did Rams fans, which was shocking to me because it's Los Angeles Rams, you know. So, unfortunately, they won the game. So, you know,
Washington
I ended up going
the
to the... Yes, Washington won the game. And... you know, I didn't know until after about like around 5 o'clock, I found out my friend was visiting from out of town. We went to the Natural History Museum, which is literally right next door to the stadium. And I walk out and we're all, you know, it's me and another girl and a guy, we're all Native. One's actually from Michigan. And we were walking down where they tailgate, and I kept asking, you know, Rams fans, because I would not want to talk to Washington fans. They were staring at us already. I think a few of them recognized us from standing there. But they were like, we lost. And I was like, oh, no. So as we walked, the Washington fans were doing the lee-lee-lee-lee-lee and screaming and doing like a mock tomahawk chop and singing and dancing in a circle, you know, portraying what they think we do. And it crushed us. Like, it was really hard to walk past that, because it hit us where it's like, this is what these people think we are. Like, it's unbelievable. And so I was so mad and so furious that I just kind of like stormed up past my friends and just kept walking, because I'd never seen anything like that before. Like, just the sheer mockery that they displayed towards, you know, it was really terrible to watch. And they totally thought it was okay. It was, you know, no skin off their back. Yeah. So
it's actually even worse when you have the kids with you and they witness that, you know, sometimes for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why I'm really glad that none of the kids were there. We left because we didn't want to stay there until after the game, considering we did have kids. You know, we were seeing people stumble out of the stadium. People were drinking, so that people were heavily intoxicated by the time the game ended. And it was a really hot day, so people were getting heat exhaustion. It wasn't going to be a very good mixture if we stayed till the very end of it. And knowing that Washington won, it would have been really bad. So I'm glad that we ended up dispersing once the kickoff started. But that was really hard. But what was also an upside is we got support from the people that are actually against the Olympics coming to Los Angeles as well. They showed up to show support, which was really nice, because then that's another community we can build with as well. Because I don't want the Olympics to come to Los Angeles either.
it's amazing that it sounds like, and what Anne was describing, is that you feel almost afraid. Like, it feels like threatening.
It's definitely rooted in historical trauma, like, for sure, because hearing that, it was a trigger. And I mean, all of our faces were surprised, our shoulders were super tense, and it was almost before we actually heard what they were saying or what they were doing, our body had instant reactions and we tensed. And it was just kind of unbelievable. And that's why I was like, I'm getting so mad. I had to get out of there as fast as possible.
That's amazing. This is exactly why we want to end, and we don't want another generation being taught this nonsense. And California, as a state, was one of the first states to go majority-minority in the country. So I wanted to thank all of you, and I know that we're all going to be looking at more protests throughout the year with the NFL schedule and also the high school football schedules. And also, we have October coming up, and we have in some communities, we're actually going to be enjoying Indigenous Peoples Day, sometimes for the first time, mm-hmm. like in Los Angeles. And other places, we are going to be having to deal with and have a conversation about Columbus coming mm-hmm. up here in October. So mm-hmm. we will have a discussion about that next time and talk mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah.
Thank you all for...
We are the original people. And
thank you.
Here. Throughout North, South, and Central America, we are Native peoples.
We're here to denounce Washington.
Don't support a racist name. Flip your jersey inside out. Flip your jersey.
Because you support oppression. You support genocide.
Hey, flip your jerseys inside out.
It's all good, man. It's all good.
Flip your jerseys inside out. Show your support. Show your support.
Yeah!
Thank you! Thank you for turning it inside out!
Thank you!
We are Come on, change it inside out!
This.
We are the Halusa Nation. We are the evolution. The continuation. We are the Halusa Nation. Our DNA is of earth and sky. Our DNA is of past and future.
The people, the people, the people. The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope, the elephant, the deer, the mineral, the iron, the copper, the coltan, the rubber, the coffee, the cotton, the sugar. The people, the people, the people, the people. The germ traveled faster than the bullet. They harvest the mountainside, protect the crops, herd the cattle. The people, the people, the people, the people, the people. The women and children were separated from the men. They are divided us according to the regional filters of their minds. The violence of arrogance crawls into the air, nestles into the geospatial cortex. We are not a conquered people. Awakened by my elder brother. The compound was on fire. Missionaries never hid their perspective. Prospectors of land would rather see us disappear. Recyclable prayers. The people, the people, the people, the people. This is my body which is given for you. The people, the people, the people. This is my blood.
Listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 a.m. and next we are going to listen to a talk by Winona LaDuc. This is again KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
You know, I don't know how else to say it, but you got to engage in this discussion about what it means to relinquish the illusion of power.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world.